Naistiki. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Setting in, I was twisting it the wrong way. Okay, so we're on Canto 4, Chapter 25, The Characteristics of King Paranjan, Text 30. Yad Esha Mapanga Vikanditendriyam Savrida Bhava Smita Vibramad Bruva Dvayopashrishto Bhagavan Manobhava Prabhadate Atanugrahana Shobane Yadesha Mapanga Vikanditendriyam Sabrida Bhava Smita Vipramad Bruva Twayopasrishto Bhagavan Mano Bhava Prabhadate Tanugrahana Shobane Yadesha Mapanga Vikanditendriyam Sabrida Bhava Smita Vipramad Bruva Twayopashrishto Bhagavan Mano Bhava Prabhadate Tanugrahanam Shobane Sabrida Bhava Smita Vipramad Bruva Twayopashrishto Bhagavan Mano Bhava Prabhavate Tanugrahana Shobane Yadesha Mapanga Vigandri Tendriyam Sabrida Bhava Smita Vipramat Purva Twayo Prasprishto Bhagavan Mano Bhava Prabhadate Tanu Brahana Sobane. Ladies, Sabrida Bhava Smita Vipramad Bruva Twayopasrishto Bhagavan Mano Bhava Adate na Guranay Shambhane Yadeshama Panga Vikandritandriyam. Sabrida Bhava Smita Vipramat Pruva. Twayopa Shrishto Bhagavan Manobhava. Prabhadate Tanugrahana Shobane. Yat, because. Isha, this. Ma, me. Apanga, by your glances. Vikandita, agitated. Indriyam, whose senses or mind. Sabrida, with shyness. Bhava, affection. Smita, smiling. Vibramat, bewildering. Bruva, with eyebrows. Twaya, by you. Upashrishtaha, being influenced. Bhagavan, the most powerful. Manaha Bhavaha, Cupid. Prabhadate is harassing. Ata, therefore. Anugrahana, be merciful. Shobane, O very beautiful one. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Certainly your glancing upon me today has very much agitated my mind. Your smile, which is full of shyness, but at the same time lusty, is agitating the most powerful Cupid within me. Therefore, O most beautiful, I ask you to be merciful upon me. Please repeat. Certainly, your glancing upon me today has very much agitated my mind. Your smile, which is full of shyness, but at the same time lusty, is agitating the most powerful Cupid within me. Therefore, O most beautiful, I ask you to be merciful upon me. Purport. Everyone has lusty desires within. And as soon as one is agitated by the movement of a beautiful woman's eyebrows, the Cupid within immediately throws his arrows at the heart. Thus one is quickly conquered by the eyebrows of a beautiful woman. When one is agitated by lusty desires, his senses are attracted by all kinds of vishaya, enjoyable things like sound, touch, form, smell and taste. These attractive sense objects oblige one to come under the control of a woman. In this way, the conditional life of a living entity begins. Conditional life means being under the control of a woman. And certainly the living entity is always at the mercy of a woman or a man. Thus, living entities live in bondage to one another, and thus they continue this conditional material life illusion by Maya. Certainly your glancing upon me today has very much agitated my mind. Your smile, which is full of shyness, but at the same time lusty, is agitating the most powerful Cupid within me. Therefore, O most beautiful, I ask you to be merciful upon me. So, the Cupid within. That means lusty desires, as Prabhupada says there. Of course, Cupid is also a personality. We find in other parts of the Bhagavatam, it's mentioned that in Ketumala, one of the varshas of Bhumandala, there is the worship of Lord Rishikesh in the form of Kamadev. Pradyumna. It's explained there that Kamadev or Cupid is actually Vishnu Tattva. Pradyumna, when he took birth as Krishna's son, he was in his previous life Kamadev or Cupid. So Prabhupada explains there that even though he's Vishnu Tattva in that form as Kamadev, he has a material body, not a spiritual one, but all of his activities are still spiritual. So sometimes Krishna can have a spiritual form. No, not sometimes, all the time. But sometimes he can also assume a material form. But that material form is not material in the sense that our forms are material. It is also acting purely spiritual. But the point there is that Kamadev, or Cupid, he is a representation of Krishna, the principle of attraction. Ultimately, the real attraction is Krishna himself, Krishna, all attractive. And any forms of attraction that we experience are manifestations of Krishna in one way or in another. Because in the spiritual world, it's mentioned there that Kandapa Koti, millions of Kandapa or Cupids are no match for the attractive features of Krishna himself. Even millions of Cupids combined, all their efforts together, cannot come anywhere near being as attractive or causing attraction as Krishna can cause it. Krishna is the soul of all souls, and as such he is the most attractive principle. So the attractive principle is a representation of Krishna, and even in this material world, therefore Cupid or Kandapa or Kamadev, whatever his name you want to give, that principle is there within the heart. As Krishna is in the heart, as the super soul, then when our attractive, or that principle of attraction goes to Krishna, then there's a perfect link between the soul and the supreme soul, Krishna. There's a perfect harmony. When the living being becomes attracted to Krishna's energies, then the direct link is blocked off. We enter into a state of forgetfulness of that all-attractive relationship, and we try to enter into a relationship with Krishna's external energy, which is also all-attractive because it's part of Krishna. Therefore, it's mentioned, Dharagya, it's impossible to overcome. Either we're attracted by Krishna personally, or we're attracted by Krishna's energy. But either way, we're always under the force or impelled by the principle of attraction. And that principle of attraction is expressed through the consciousness, through the mind, through the intellect, and through the senses. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains that the senses, the mind, and the intellect are the sitting places of lust, or that principle of attraction. So when we choose not to serve Krishna, not to try to please Krishna, not to worship Krishna as Rishikesh, the master of the senses, then our senses become dictated to by another feature of Krishna, Maya, by Krishna's external energy. Either way, we're always being dictated to. Our senses, our minds, and our intellect are always under a superior influence. Because we talk about controlling the senses, that means restricting the senses from their engagement with that external energy. But ultimately, nobody can be a Goswami without actually allowing his senses to be controlled by Krishna himself, Rishikesh. We actually never at any point are the controller of our senses, or of our minds, or of our intellect. We're always being dictated to. So either we're dictated by the external energy, or we're being dictated by the internal energy. The only independence that we have, or control, if you like, that we have, is what choice we make. Whether we want to be attracted are impelled by the attraction of the external energy, or whether we want to be impelled by the attraction of Krishna himself. That's our choice. Yatech-chasitata-kuru. Krishna, at the end of, or more or less at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, after he's explained all the different items of knowledge, he tells Arjuna, now you choose. It's up to you what you want to do. If you work with me, I'll work through you. I'll control your senses directly, and you'll be victorious. And if you don't want to work through me, if you don't make that choice, you want to go off and think that you're doing your own thing, then that's up to you. And then, of course, you won't be successful, at least not on the spiritual platform or for a spiritual purpose. You can think that you're being successful by going off and sitting in the forest and retiring from the fight. You choose whether you want to fight or not. You might not like the idea of fighting. I've chosen that, but you don't have to choose that if you don't want to. That's up to you. But if you don't choose that, and you go off and sit in the forest and retire from the fighting, still you'll be impelled to act according to the nature that you have acquired as a Kshatriya. You won't be able to avoid it. So the idea of controlling the senses by simply withdrawing them from the objects of the senses and remaining in that position is a fallacy. It cannot be done. We have no supreme control. Krishna is the supreme controller, and he dictates to all living entities either directly or indirectly. But nobody has control except Krishna himself. So it's only the choice that we have, that we have to decide what we want to do with that choice. So here, of course, it's mentioned that somebody has already surrendered his choice to the external energy, then he comes under the control of what we call lust. It's there within the heart. It impels us automatically. We've made our choice, and now all the different dazzling forms of Maya appear before us and attract our senses in different ways. Vishvanath Chakravarti Thakur has listed the different ways of lusty attraction. So this is from the purport to the 10th canto, chapter 42, text 14, where the verse says, the sight of Krishna aroused Cupid in the hearts of the city women. Thus agitated, they forgot themselves. Their clothes, braids, and bangles became disheveled, and they stood as still as figures in a painting. In other words, they were stunned by seeing Krishna, by being attracted by Krishna. So in the purport, Srila Vishvanath Chakravarti Thakur states that since the women of Mathura immediately experienced symptoms of conjugal attraction when they saw Krishna, they were the most advanced devotees in the city. The 10 effects of Cupid are described as follows. First comes attraction expressed through the eyes. Then intense attachment in the mind. Then determination. Then loss of sleep. Then becoming emaciated. Then disinterest in external things. Then shamelessness. Then madness. And then becoming stunned. And finally death. So those are the effects of lust. So these are the 10 stages. Vishvanath Chakravarti also points out that devotees who possess pure love of Godhead generally do not exhibit the symptom of death, the final one, since this is inauspicious in relationship to Krishna. They do, however, manifest the other 9 symptoms, culminating in becoming stunned in ecstasy. So anybody who's ever been in love, so-called, or lust, we have experience of these different symptoms manifesting. A person becomes bewildered. And especially through this exchange of glances, looking. Yeah, it's why, therefore, you see that one of the main items of beauty women like to do is the eyebrows. They're always plucking their eyebrows, making them very nice, arched up very nicely and very smoothly, because it attracts the attention to the eyes. The eyes of all the senses are the only one which is directly wired to the brain. The other senses, there are different pathways which transmit the information that's been gathered through the skin or through the nose or through the tongue or through the ears. They're transmitted by different pathways to the brain for processing by the mind. The brain is used by the mind to process information. But the eyes are directly wired to the brain. It's almost like they're direct extension of the brain, and therefore the impact from looking in the eyes of another person is far greater than any other sensual impulse. Yeah, if we look and see the form from a distance, that's one thing, but when you look into the eyes of another person, you see their mind, intellect, or even their soul. Or at least it seems like that. Therefore, you'll see that in the descriptions of the dealings with the gopis and Krishna, the gopis are always looking down. They don't look in Krishna's eyes directly. That's another way of attraction, to avoid that exchange of looking directly in the eyes, but to be shy and to look down. And then sometimes to look up and then look down again. So in this way, the exchange becomes very agitating. Yeah, it becomes more and more intense, looking and not looking. But that principle of looking, the eyes, the exchange of glances is very, very powerful. And therefore, this quality of shyness is very much recommended in Vedic culture. Yeah? If the culture is designed to help people to spiritually progress, then, conversely, it must be designed to help people to become freed from material attraction. In other words, the principles of material attraction should be subdued, and the principles of spiritual attraction should be improved or increased. So, therefore, one is advised to avoid sensual contact with certain objects of the senses, and then to redirect one's consciousness towards a higher principle. Yeah, param drisva nivaratate. You have to have a higher taste. So you have to restrict the senses from attraction to the external energy of the Lord, and then you have to learn how to redirect them towards the service of the Supreme Lord. In this way, there's a twofold path. Yeah, and so the idea of seeing is especially important. That the ladies are trained not to look directly in the face of a man. Because as soon as that connection between the eyes is achieved, then immediately there's this very powerful principle of attraction. So the Vedic culture was that the ladies are trained to be very shy. Yeah, they look down. Or they cover. Prabhupada told me one time that one time he was traveling in a train and there were two girls in the same carriage. One of them was from a village. She had a sari on, but she had the sari over her face. Yeah, she was hanging it over her face. And the other girl was a city girl, so she was just open and like that. So the city girl was lifting up the veil, trying to make fun of the village girl, though she's somehow or another backward, because she's still got the sari over her head, and she was lifting it up to look at, to see her, to show her face. And then the village girl, she turned around and whack, she slapped her. So she gave her a hefty whack and kept her face covered. And Prabhupada, he told her, yes, you've done the right thing, because she's preserving her shyness. So this is a very important principle for controlling calm or lust. The senses have to be controlled and properly directed and engaged in spiritual activity. If they're not, then ultimately this Cupid within will impel us to re-engage the senses, even if we're you know, trying to disengage from material activity. We might go off and sit in the Himalayas in a cave, or go into a jungle or some other place to get away, or even sit in the bottom of a river to get away from the impulses of the senses. But even there, wherever we go, Maya will find us out. If we don't have a better engagement for our senses and direct our consciousness to a higher principle, Maya will find the ways and means of bringing us back down under the power of her attraction. We might try to sit back and, shut down, so to speak. But ultimately, as we've seen, there are many stories of great yogis as they become powerful by controlling the senses. Sometimes King Indra or somebody else, they'll send some apsara. There's descriptions in the Bhagavatam. And the apsaras are millions of times more beautiful than any woman on this planet. And they come, and then by their dancing, by the sweetness of their voices, by their movements and attractive features, then even great yogis sometimes succumb to their attractive power. That lust within comes out again. That impulse from within comes out. And then they break their vows and they fall down. So Bari Muni was sitting in the bottom, I think it was so Bari Muni, was sitting in the bottom of a river, practicing his yoga. But then he just happened to open his eyes. Because if you've ever been in the bottom of a river, it's like sensory deprivation. If you go scuba diving or something, it's a very dense medium and the senses don't function very well. Hearing a little bit, but the sound is muted. But, seeing is limited, touching, everything, the senses become muted. Sometimes the yogis, they go down below the water because it cuts out all the sensory exchanges between the senses and the sense objects. But Sabari Muni, he just happened to open his eyes and he saw two fish procreating, having sex in whatever way fishes do. And immediately the sight of that agitated his mind so much he had to come out and then go off looking for a woman. So this is the position. Ultimately, the senses, although we talk about one has to become a Goswami or a Swami, a controller of the senses, and avoid this entanglement that Paranjan is just about to enter into, still, if one does not engage positively in the service of Krishna, the all-attractive, the Rishikesh, the master of the senses, then ultimately one will again fall down onto the platform of ordinary sensual attraction and engagement. So therefore we have to be very, very careful. And the process of Bhakti Yoga, of course, is designed to enable us to engage all of our senses in various ways in the service of the Lord. Deity worship is especially important so that one can see the form of the Lord. As one sees the form of the Lord, gradually his attraction for the form, ordinary forms of other living beings, ordinary living beings, diminishes. He begins to see that the ordinary forms that he was attracted to before, say the beautiful form of a woman or a man, the nice eyebrows, the shape of the ears, everything becomes attractive. the shape of the nose. Just like in Victorian times in England, because the ladies actually used to cover up from head to foot. But sometimes their skirts would lift up a little bit and their ankles would show. So what's so attractive about somebody's ankles? But this became actually a subject for much attraction amongst the men because they couldn't see any other part of the body. They could just see the ankle. So they became very attracted by a woman's ankles. So like this, the attraction is always there. But as one becomes attracted to, let's say, Krishna's feet, instead of the feet of an ordinary woman or a man, we become attracted to Krishna's lotus feet, then we begin to see that the other forms that Maya creates are actually not very attractive at all. Why? Because they're temporary. Something may have an element of attraction in it for some time. That's youth. Yeah? Kukuri Nava, what is that? Kukuri? Kukuri Nava Yogane. That in youth, even a dog is attractive. There's a saying in Bengali. Kukuri, which means dog, Yogane in youth, becomes very attractive. Yeah. So during there's a certain period when the body is quite attractive, especially when one is young. There's a certain energy, a certain shakti that comes out from the male and the female, and that attracts other living beings. But then, of course, when one gets older, that attractive qualities begins to diminish. You get into your 40s, and then the wrinkles start coming, and you know the flesh starts sagging. And then you see that because people are very bewildered, they spend any amount of money to try to preserve, you know, the attractive features of this material body. Therefore, you know, cosmetics is the biggest industry in the whole world. It's bigger than any other industry, cosmetics. Lipstick, makeup, you know, eyeliner, perfumes, so many things to keep on attracting people to this body. But how long can you do that for? Ultimately, you get into your 60s and 70s, then all attractive features are lost. And then finally, the body is left behind and it rots. And then who is attracted to a dead body? It simply rots away and disintegrates. So one has to learn the art of seeing that even whilst the body is at its peak. One has to see through that facade that's created by Maya and become attracted to a higher principle, to eternal beauty, not to temporary beauty. Prabhupada, of course, told that famous story about liquid beauty. So real beauty is eternal. So in devotional service, the mind, the senses, the intelligence is trained to become attracted to the eternal beauty of Krishna. We never see pictures of Krishna as an old man, wrinkled and haggard, with his teeth falling out, or a hearing aid, or... No, he's always eternally youthful, Navayogana. That is the Supreme Lord's beauty. So it's a question of redirecting our consciousness, because the consciousness is expressed through the senses. So how we direct and engage the senses will directly affect the mind and directly affect the intellect. So if we direct the senses to these bags of flesh and blood and stool and urine and bone and marrow and fat, then what will be the end result? We know that. Any intelligent person, if they're a little bit sober, they'll understand what will be the end result of becoming absorbed in attraction for these ordinary, you know, carcasses, material forms. And on conversely, one should know what the end result will be in becoming attracted to the beautiful eternal form of Krishna. Yeah. So that's our choice. Krishna presents himself in this material world in various ways. Any form of Krishna is always very attractive, wonderfully attractive, even when he appears as a hog, because nobody would normally be, at least people with advanced consciousness, would not normally be attracted by a, you know, a pig. It'd be quite horrible. But when Krishna appears as Lord Varaha, he's all attracted to every living being. So Krishna's form, spiritual form, is always all attractive. And our process then is to develop or cultivate that attraction, direct our consciousness through our senses by engaging them in various ways for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. And as we do that, then Krishna is pleased and he becomes more and more apparent to his devotees. We can't, you know, capture Krishna within the purview of our senses, but Krishna can appear through our senses to us. It's a process of revelation, as Prabhupada said. Krishna reveals himself. So according to our choice, Krishna then reveals himself either directly in his spiritual forms or indirectly through his material forms. But either way, the only power that we have is the power of choice. Control of the senses is entirely in Krishna's hands. So we have to just make our choice. And these stories, therefore, of King Paranjan and what happens to him, having become bewildered by this material form, is to help us to make the proper choice. Okay, so we'll finish there. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Vasudev Prabhu.
Thank you for the class. You mentioned how no one can really escape the presence, the power of Vishaya, the senses, and Maya, Devi, whether it is in the form of a woman or in the form of a fish. However, in the scriptures, and the spiritual master keep reminding us, repeating the instruction to stay away as much as possible. Like brahmacharis are supposed to very strongly limit their contact with the opposite sex, and even householders do. So at the same time, we should do our best to avoid, but there is no point in avoiding. So there seems to be a little bit of a paradox here.
It's not really a paradox. The explanation is, of course, that the senses always have to be engaged one way or the other. So on the one hand, you restrict the engagement with material sense objects, but on the other hand, you must re-engage the senses in spiritual objects or forms. If you don't do that, then mere restriction alone will not last for very long. Even that's pointed out by Lord Brahma, that the impersonalists, even if they get to a point where they absolutely disassociate themselves from the material realm, and they enter into Brahman, that means to do that you've got to be completely disinterested, no attraction whatsoever for Maya, for the realm of Maya. But even if they get to the point of entering into Brahman, because their spiritual senses are not engaged in the lotus feet of Krishna, Yushmanangriyaha. Their lotus feet of Krishna, they don't recognize those lotus feet. They again come back down to this material world. And who can even enter into Brahman nowadays? Practically no one. Very, very difficult. So it's not a paradox. The two go hand in hand. You know, as your spiritual attraction increases, your material attraction decreases. As your spiritual attraction decreases, your material attraction must increase. But the principle of attraction cannot be denied. It's always active. It's there within the heart. Because Krishna's in the heart in two forms. As Krishna or as Kamadev. Either way, he's always there. That impulse is there within the heart. It has to be dealt with. It has to be directed. But it can't be denied. That's the point. All right?
Yes, thank you. One more?
Yeah, unless somebody else had a question.
Hi, Krishna. How was it? Because you said that we attracted to the yoga maya, you know, Krishna external energy. But at the same time, actually, we don't have how to build our strength, the strength on the Krishna consciousness.
How to build up our strength?
Strength. Because sometimes we want to do something, actually because we're having the material body, then we're having the feeling, you know.
Okay, so your question is that as long as we're embodied, there's a kind of a weakness there. and sometimes it's difficult to overcome or avoid the impulses of material, the material form. Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm. Yes, because we having the material form, and sometimes I can see that some devotees, even the fasting day, they can do like cooking, the whole day they're doing the cooking or whatever, you know. But for me, I don't have that kind of strength, you know. Even like
yes,
yesterday,
so there's a saying in English, there is strength in numbers.
Mm-mm.
Individually, it's very difficult for anybody to make advancement in spiritual life. Because Maya is very overwhelming. You cannot avoid the the input that's constantly flowing in through the senses into the mind and the intelligence. You can't avoid that. And when you're on your own, it's very difficult to make that choice. Yeah? But if you're with others who are also making the same choice, birds of a feather flock together. It's called sadhu sangha. When you're associating with others who are also directing their senses towards Krishna and away from Maya, then you get some strength from that. So therefore, Rupa Goswami, he advises, this is the first principle. Yeah, after Shraddha, some little faith is there, then sadhu sangha. If you don't keep sadhu sangha or association with devotees, your progress in spiritual life is extremely difficult, if not impossible. So we must always keep ourselves with devotees. And therefore, Prabhupada, as part of our, or as the main part, to sustain our sadhana, or spiritual practice, he created, you know, a society. Society means social interaction. Yeah, it means being with others. But this is a society where everyone is trying to please Krishna. And therefore the selfish impulses, they're minimized because everybody's trying to do everything for the pleasure of the Lord. And therefore there's pressure on us, as long as we're within the society of devotees, there's pressure on us to also behave like a devotee and do things for Krishna's pleasure and not do things for our own selfish pleasure. Society creates that kind of pressure. Again, we're subjected to pressure. We're always subjected to pressure. Yeah? So we become subordinate, or we are subordinate, if you like. We're tiny little individual living beings. So whatever society that we live in, we get affected by it. As Prabhupada used to say, if you live in a society of drunkards, you'll become a drunkard, because that's what everybody else is doing. And if you want to stay associated with them, you have to do the same kinds of behavior. You have to see things the same way. You have to respond in the same way that everybody else around you is doing. Otherwise, as they say, you're sticking out like a sore thumb. If you don't behave the same way that everybody else behaves in the society that you're living, you'll be an outcast. Yeah? And being alone is not desirable. It's not tolerable, actually. So if you stay in the society of devotees, even if you feel individually weak, the presence of other devotees and remaining in that society will actually sustain you. It will give strength. Strength in numbers. All right?
Can I ask further question? Because I don't know, maybe I'm more, I'm more protecting myself. I'm a bit afraid is because you are saying like the society. It's like something like family. Because you say that like, it's a society, like association with others is very important. But at the same time, maybe I'm overprotecting myself.
Maybe you're
protecting myself on the feeling side.
I'm sorry, I can't make out what you're saying.
No, actually I say that maybe I'm more on protecting myself on the feeling side. Because you know why? Like, I think I experienced, I having some experience, like, I inquire something, then the devotee will say that don't inquire some number, it belongs to who? Then the devotee will say that that it belongs to my Prabhuji, referring one leaflet. Leaflet is a Radyatra leaflet, then they got a contact number. Then the contact number, I referring the one Mataji and ask whose contact number is it? Then she said,
What's your question, Mataji? Mm-hmm. What is your question? Very simply and succinctly.
That means that I having some bad experience is on the associate with the devotee. Because of the experience, that's why I try to protecting myself on the feeling side to avoid to get hurting from others.
You're saying that you've had some difficulties even with association with devotees?
Yes. Because
yes, well, that's natural because in the Kanista stage or the early stages of devotional service, one has a mixture of some spiritual attraction, but there's a lot of material attraction still there due to previous conditioning. So there's a kind of a transit stage where one has to therefore regulate the senses very carefully under rule and regulation, and then gradually by doing that, this spiritual attraction increases more. So sometimes it appears that it's even, by force, restriction, getting away from sensual activity, material sensual activity. But that has to be there because we're addicted to material activities. It's like second nature. So there's a kind of a transitory phase when one's coming out of material life and entering into spiritual life. If you stick with it, gradually you'll get to a point where your spiritual attraction becomes so strong that you automatically lose all your material attraction and taste. So it's a question of sticking with the process. You have to be very patient. Utsahan nischayat dharyat. You have to be enthusiastic, but at the same time very patient. Okay? You have a last question.
Sometimes it seems that women in our society, they have just rules, and men, they have they have just obligations, and men, they have only rights. Because in many temples there is such a situation that women are treated like third class, and is it right that that there is such discrimination and such such attitude? Like Bhaktivedanta Swami, he was strictly opposed to such. Such kind of attitude.
Yeah, well, it's a big topic, but I will say that the baseline for any interactions between devotees is respect. And if anybody's acting disrespectfully to any other devotee, man or woman, then they are violating the very principle of bhakti, because bhakti means respect, it means love and affection. Because on the spiritual platform, that love and affection takes quite a while to develop. But the beginning of it is respect. So if you don't deal with other people in a respectful way, what to speak about devotees, even one has to, just like the story of Mrigari the hunter, he was previously, killing animals. He wasn't even killing them. He was half killing them because he liked to see them in pain, flapping. So that was his condition. But after he became a devotee, then when Narada Muni and Parvat Muni came to see him, he was hesitant to bow down, not out of disrespect, but because there were so many ants on the ground and he didn't want to step on them and kill them. So he was respecting even the ants. So in devotional service, there's no room for disrespect. That is a symptom of material consciousness. All right.
What to do if it is going on everywhere, and it seems that society is oriented on men, and women are kept like third class.
I don't know whether that's true everywhere. It may be true in some places, but the point is that if everybody keeps engaging in devotional service, ultimately that kind of adulterated consciousness, men, women, seeing people as inferior or superior or whatever, that will diminish. If it doesn't, then if the person continues to act disrespectfully to other devotees, ultimately Krishna will separate that person from the association of devotees. So the thing to do is to continue on, even if you feel that you're not being dealt with nicely. One of the symptoms of a devotee is that he doesn't require any respect from others, but he shows all respects to others. So if you're feeling disrespectful or disrespected, you know, that also is a material feeling. If you're feeling that I'm being disrespected on the basis of my body, yeah, and then you get disappointed and go away, that's a material feeling. A devotee does not require respect from anyone. They're happy just to go on and do their service under whatever conditions. And if somebody does disrespect them, then they say, all right, Krishna will deal with this situation and rectify it one way or another. Otherwise, you can always find any excuse for not doing devotional service. The whole world is full of disrespectful people, wherever you go. That symptom is always there. So even if you feel disrespected in the society of devotees, if you leave the society of devotees, you'll still be disrespected in the society of karmis. Because a karmi means that they're only doing things for their own selfish purposes, and they'll only use you for that purpose. And when you're of no use for that purpose, they'll get rid of you. That's material life. In spiritual life, the principle of respect is the basic principle. And even if it's not there at the beginning, gradually it will develop if a person remains engaged in devotional service. But in the meantime, in the early stages, we have to be tolerant of each other's offenses. As you may perceive somebody being disrespectful to you, somebody else may perceive you as being disrespectful to them. So the first business is that each of us individually should make sure that at least we are living up to the standards of devotional service. And if we are, then Krishna will be pleased with us, and Krishna will give us that feeling of protection and shelter. And when we're feeling Krishna's protection and shelter, even if somebody else disrespects me, it won't matter. It won't affect my consciousness. So individually we have to develop this proper mood of how to interact with other devotees. And if somebody's misbehaving and not interacting in the proper way, we should pray to Krishna that they get rectified. Alright? Alright, we'll finish there. Srila Prabhupada ki.